He's like, so this guy, Tom Joad. And we're just like, oh, God, you just haven't been listening for like 4 months, let alone haven't said this word aloud.
The ghost of old Tom Joad.
Really, really relatable content there, Pablo. Just bringing
you haven't started the show yet.
Grapes of Rat Talk. Sure.
Hello. We are officially starting a fake television show where we debate nothing. This is Debatable. Welcome to Jeff Passan here. Jeff Clinton, I believe, is like only theoretically conscious right now. I don't know how he is doing this program. I believe he's also doing SportsCenter right now simultaneously. I don't know how that's happening.
Clinton, I'm dressed for SportsCenter.
You are clearly dressed for SportsCenter. Clinton Yates, you are in your kitchen, and yeah, behind you is a microwave where I assume also, all your takes go. Yeah.
No, my Instant Pot is where I cook them.
Oh, okay? Snap.
And then look right to the left of it. That's where I store them in the dumpster fire. You see what I'm saying? That's how that works. Anyway, I don't know what I was doing there.
I have weird microwave habits.
Okay, let's talk about this, because one time when I was hosting a radio show affiliated with this show, I told the listeners I too have weird microphone habits. I only use repeating integers and with the microphone. The microwave. That's the only cooking method I use, is whether or not it's like 66 or 99 or 333. That's how I use the microwave.
That's serial killer-esque. Jeff, yeah. can you best that?
No, actually, I can't. I avoid round numbers. So one time I microwaved something for 2 minutes and 9 seconds, and I was just called 209 by that friend forever.
That's 100% weirder to me on every level.
No, see,
I don't know
see,
why.
Repeating integers and I'm the weird one?
Yeah.
Is that how we're starting this?
You know why I started? I used to use 99 for like everything. And then after that, I'd expanded from that universe. That's basically what happened.
Weird at all.
See,
no.
My kink, my microwave kink, is that I just can't ever let it beep. And so my microwave is constantly
one of those.
Just microwave blue balls, just for all time. Apologies to my microwave for never feeling the full satisfaction of actually. Conclusion. Hey, Alabaster,
hey,
what?
Alabaster, how you doing?
Pablo, I do the same thing, and then I annoy everyone else who lives in my house by leaving a one on the microwave that they then have to press clear before setting their microwave.
That's really
damn
what
right.
It's about. You enjoy the act of annoying people more than you do that microwave move. And you know that you left a little part of you there that people have to reckon with every time.
Here's the problem. Right. Leaving the one is a failure. You need to pull it right when it hits the zero, but before it does the beep. That's what
Jeff,
the pros do. Ooh.
Jeff, the rhythm method for microwaving is a dangerous game. Real dangerous game.
Gosh. Way to go on that. By the way, do you see my t-shirt? It's related to today.
Oh, boy. Yeah, speaking of things that are seemingly designed to antagonize people, Alabaster, where should we start today's show?
Yeah, I mean, with this panel, it seems like we'll definitely get started with some, professional soccer overseas.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I'm just kidding. We'll
Barcelona.
Start with baseball. Our first topic. Where do you see MLB's lockout going from here?
So just for full disclosure here, Clinton Yates and Jeff Passan are the two people in my life who care more about baseball than anyone else I'm aware of on this planet. Guys, you take it from here. I have so many jokes to make, but I feel like we should establish just what the hell is going on right now.
I'll start because Jeff has been working too hard. The bottom line is that this was the so-called drop-dead deadline created by the league to prevent any regular season game from getting canceled. They're already not in spring training. Minor leaguers are playing. That's a whole other story. But writ large, this yesterday was viewed as the day that if something didn't happen then, you could theoretically look forward to something that was not the product that we're used to from a full season standpoint. The reasons for which all that matters, I will let Jeff explain.
I figure before I actually start talking about this, I have to do something in honor of what was done yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Smile, right, exactly.
Yo, can we talk about that smile for a second here? Because in terms of body language medicine, it feels like Rob Manfred has a very, like, he has a condition that I'm almost afraid to make fun of. Like, how do you diagnose Rob Manfred being sort of in the uncanny valley of, like, human interactions?
Robotic is a word I would use, for sure, but it's also like you know how you see those AI robots? when they're like, oh yeah, they're sentient now and they come to life. Like, his facial expressions move like that.
Oh, God.
You know what I'm saying? Oh God. You know what I mean? And like, that's a totally unnecessary shot, but like, it's true in big situations because we don't see him that often. So we're not very used to what it is that he does when he comes out. And then it's like, oh, right, this is how he interacts with people. And it doesn't make you feel any better about the decisions they're making.
So yeah, I'm a big nerd when it comes. Yeah. I'm a big nerd when it comes to human movement. And there's a principle called proprioception, which is knowing where your body is in space. For example, my 9-year-old has no proprioception. So I get kicked in the nuts way more than I actually should.
Right.
It feels like Rob Manfred sometimes is lacking facial proprioception because you know he's not trying to smile when he's up there. And you know that all of us, there's a whole account on Twitter, at Passin' Derps, where they take like the worst shot of me, the right. worst frame. And Alabaster, please go find a good old passenger to show
this
everyone.
This is excellent work out of Jeff, finding a way to turn this back to him that we can content out of. That expert move.
I mean, how could you not turn it back on this?
Yeah.
That's good derp.
Those are great. Those are great. But yeah, yeah.
I feel like Rob Manfred got derped. He wasn't really smiling. Come on. Yeah, that's a good one. Actually, that one's not bad.
That one looks like you're making a face, like for real.
This one looks like Jeff's just a little mischievous.
Ooh.
What's Jeff up to?
I might have to do that here.
Out here pulling out microwaves, you know what I'm saying?
Oh. But wait, okay, wait. So Jeff, yeah, oh man. So Manfred derp here. Was merely sort of like the setup to what? What would you describe what was delivered after the derp?
An embarrassing moment for Major League Baseball. A sad moment for fans. An unfortunate moment for everyone, including the players. And a culmination, Pablo, of 10 years of players building up to this point where they felt like they weren't going to take it anymore. And we're going to be talking about this on the daily tomorrow. So please tune into ESPN Daily for a full accounting of this. But what this story essentially is, it's about players getting sick and tired of the way that they had been treated throughout recent years, whether it was through their salaries going down as revenues went up, service time manipulation, tanking, Rob Manfred calling the commissioner's trophy a piece of metal. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And this laundry list of grievances happened to coincide at the same time a collective bargaining agreement was coming up. And owners simply say, we pay players enough. We don't want to pay them anymore. And now we're probably going to miss opening day because of it.
And Pablo, the reason why I think to sort of the baseball fan who, you know, Jeff is in this thing in a very specific way and understands a lot about all the internal, you know, machinations and all of that, that I think to the average baseball fan, even the average sports fans, that matters. But what's changed between the last work stoppage or even forget the last work stoppage, what's changed in the last 5 years in America, I would say, is that people don't just inherently think that the method of operation of a billionaire is something to take seriously or to take account as the way to do things. And so the average person looks at this and says, hold on, you guys are doing what? You're cutting minor league teams? You're trying to tell them they should be paying to be there? And then on top of that, you're telling players that they can't make as much money as they should, and you're not even telling us how much money you're making anyway? Like, a normal person understands that in 2022 very differently than they did in, say, 92 or 93, the last time this sort of stuff came up. And so that's where it's particularly depressing, because what was evidenced by the actions of yesterday is that greed is really the only thing pushing the owners. There's nothing there to stand on in terms of building the game, growing the game, or keeping the game, because they could have started these negotiations far earlier. And hello, you can also play without a labor agreement. It's happened before. And that none of that going down is an indication that owners just don't like baseball as much as everybody who's actually involved in the game. And that is the largest depressing part, I think, for most sportsmen.
Well, I want to put this take in the microwave behind you, Clinton.
Sure.
Because I want to figure out, like, the villain here.
Hook
right
time. Nine, and, nine.
And Yes, please. The idea that, okay, let's figure out who to be mad at here. I feel like Rob Manfred with the derp face, with the hunk of metal, with the wrestling belt that Jeff has reported, you guys have talked about in the past, right? The idea that in arbitration, there is a reward for being the team that is successfully the stingiest, right? All of that makes Rob Manfred, you know, on the commissioner group chat, clearly the guy who is most humiliated right now. Like, it's funny how that one went from like, wait a minute, Roger Goodell is making Adam Silver look like sleeping Aristotle. And now Roger Goodell is somehow a guy who has figured out like COVID policies and has steered the capitalism of sports to the top of the planet, basically. And now Rob Manfred is clearly like the villain. And I'm wondering, is that the framing of the story here? Like, how much is that guy actually responsible for all the things that we are getting heated about, as it were?
What Rob Manfred did was give the players someone around whom they could coalesce. You know, otherwise there are these 30 faceless guys who sit in their gilded offices that are typically not in the cities in which the teams they own operate, and are puppeteers for the sport. Rob Manfred is not the puppeteer for the sport. He is one of the faces of the sport. And because of that, when he goes out in public and mangles words, which he does more often, unfortunately, than not, he gives players grist for the mill. He gives them opportunity to say, this is the person we should be training our energy on. This is the person. Oh, what you got there? Open it up.
Says, so what does yours say when it's ready? Mine says food first and then ready. I just realized that.
Mine just says zero.
Really?
As and as per usual, I have never found
it. You don't even know. You don't even know.
Never figured it out.
To pick up on, to pick up on Jeff's point, though, I mean, Rob is a Manfred. Like, look, do I like Rob Manfred for what he does? No. But honestly, to your question, Pablo, this isn't about Rob Manfred to me. He's a bad representative for a group of bad actors, in my opinion. And what those actors are and what they do is really what's at issue here. It's not necessarily about one guy. He's just a very poor messenger for, I think, a group of people that are not in the best interest of the sport. Never mind that league.
So Marcus Stroman, the Cubs pitcher, is out here on Twitter saying Manfred got to go, right? We've seen like these public critiques, like the dam be broken on just like talking all sorts of mess about the guy who is theoretically your boss. What I want to know, though, is if this is sort of the landscape, is this helpful? Is Rob Manfred good at the job, right? Because, Clinton, what you're suggesting here is that there is a bad actor hiding, or 30 of them hiding behind this guy. Jeff, I'm curious, do the owners like the job Rob Manfred is doing, even if it's just merely as, like, the stinkiest dead red herring that you could throw onto a podium?
I was going to say, he's the red meat that gets thrown out there and eaten by the wolves, right? And he is a very handsomely paid piece of meat. I mean, in the end, if that's what Rob Manfred's job is, to protect the owners, then he's doing a good job, because ownership has stayed very, very quiet throughout this entire thing.
Yes.
There have been no public breaks. There has been, to my knowledge, no behind the scenes backstabbing going on. Of course, listen, you're going to, when there are owners, you're always going to have a group who's not happy with what's going on. But they understand, you know, Ted Turner very famously said once upon a time, gentlemen, we have the only legal monopoly in America and we are about to F it up. And that's because all of the backstabbing that was going on led to the Players Association making the leaps that it did in the 1970s and eventually gaining free agency for Andy Messersmith and for the rest of sports. And so owners know that when there are fractions there, when you have people who have divergent ideas and priorities, that's the thing that's going to kill you as an ownership class more than the players and the players' sentiment itself.
Yeah, and that idea that the owners can cry poor as American oligarchs and then expect the public opinion to be on their side about something they're willfully taking away, to me, it's like, it's one thing to be out of touch. It's another thing to be on a total other planet from a logic standpoint, from your strategy. And that's what I'm saying again, Pablo. That's almost more depressing than anything. It's not just that that's what you're doing. It's that you thought somebody might buy this. You know what I'm saying? At least in terms of a reasonably smart fan. And when I think about it all the time, I say to myself, you know, what's odd is that people talk about all the time, like, oh, well, young fans versus older fans versus fans of the game versus fans of sports. To me, if you're the owners trying to convince baseball fans that you are the ones in the right, you're courting the wrong people to keep your game alive. That doesn't even make sense from a generational standpoint, because the things that you're doing are, in fact, killing the game. So why would you want people? It's easy in my mind to understand, but there's just no logical stance to me for a basic fan of baseball to say, you know what, the players screwed this up. That just is never going to make sense to me in this particular case.
How mad? I mean, look, you guys are plugged into the game. Jeff, I know in covering this, you've been like texting with like players. For people who aren't like minute to minute on this, how mad are they? Because the idea that these guys who are otherwise caricatured as pickup truck driving fishermen who, you know, are not exactly the leftists of America, the fact that those guys find themselves calling for the comeuppance to our country's billionaires feels funny to me, and also clearly something that is genuinely felt.
Comrades angry. Yeah. I mean, the idea that these baseball players have banded together the way they have, I know it's unlike anything I've ever seen. It's like things that I've read. You know, I've read Lords of the Realm by John Hellyer, and it's a brilliant book, and I would recommend it to anybody who likes sports and wants to understand why the sporting world is the way that it is. It's because of the Major League Baseball Players Association's actions in the 1970s. And there was a scene that was relayed to me that I found very interesting down in the Dominican Republic. Now, there are no Dominican player reps among the 30 teams and no Dominican players on the executive subcommittee for the Major League Baseball Players Association. So there, you know, there's always concern. Major League Baseball is always wondering, well, what are the Latinos got? What are the Latino Americans saying? Well, they go down for a meeting there, and who walks into the room but David Ortiz? And you know, when David Ortiz walks into a room, every single eyeball goes right toward him. He is one of the most magnetic, dynamic people I've ever seen. There's just
this
an energy.
This is my effing room. Yes.
There's just an energy that radiates from him. And David Ortiz gives a speech to 50 or 60 Dominican players in there that essentially says, the people before you fought so you could be here and make millions of dollars. It's your turn to fight now. He was saying that if it means giving up games, then you give up games. And you're not doing it for anybody other than the future generation of baseball players. And I, 5 years ago, I wouldn't have ever thought that the union would have allowed itself to get to this point. But it didn't allow itself to get here. It chose this. It charted its own course. And to be where it is now, to be a day into this, you know, post-regular season game being canceled world and 91 days into this lockout, the strength of the union up to this point is the most surprising part to me.
I would agree with that. And it's something that, you know, and Pablo, I'll tell you this, talking to former players is often as instructive to, you know, about this as it is current ones. And,
sure,
you know, I talk to guys that are still pissed at things that happened in the 90s. You can feel the sort of PTSD a lot of these guys have around exactly the things we're talking about, service time manipulation and all the stuff that they had to deal with and go through. It's like they almost got away with training a generation, these owners, to believe that this was the right way to do it. And for many cases, they have. You still have guys that say, well, I toiled through the whatever, so you have to do it too. But writ large, that's gone away. And that's the only real piece of, like, hope I think I have about this, is that the average person understands that what's going on here is a matter of greed. And that does not just come from the player's side, because, hello, this is a labor issue. And that's the only thing I can really take forward, going forward as something, a kernel of hope. We're moving towards the right direction. You got to start somewhere.
And Clinton, organizing in baseball is not just limited to the major leagues these days. You have to look at organizations like Advocates for Minor Leaguers. Now, it's not a union, but it's a bunch of players who are trying to get together to effect change. in the minor leagues, wages have gone up, still at poverty level, still embarrassing, still a sham, but they've gone up. Minor leaguers for the first time this year are getting housing provided by their organizations. Another good thing, step in the right direction. We'll see how they actually go about it. But the power of the collective is strong. And I think baseball, more than any other professional sport in America, illustrates that. I mean, you know, the NFLPA has been, oh, did you really just do that?
Just the turnaround time.
Number seven is the winner, by the way.
For the podcast audience, Alabaster just laid down a card that has 8 derps of pass and face.
Around the words, Jeff's in his bag. I'm glad you mentioned unity, though, because now would be a perfect time for me to break out my show and tell, which is a list.
What is that?
Is a list of all the minor league squads. It's two-sided. This is from 2018, right? Now, the reason I say this, there's two sides to it. The reason I say this is because think of all these teams. Think of the fabric of America that makes up. MLB decided they were going to get rid of 42 of those teams just because they just didn't feel that that was necessarily a market efficiency. And like, I don't care what you think about people's right to make money in this country. The bottom line is that the best way to improve baseball, never mind the major leagues, is to make sure that more people are playing. Okay? This is the thing that they do not seem to believe other people understand. The human capital is the most vital capital you have in a baseball game or in a baseball team or in a baseball franchise. And sure, you might have found a way to maximize that in terms of to the dollar amount, but you haven't found a way to maximize that in terms of what the overall product is, which to me is how you get to higher dollar amounts. You teach people to actually like baseball, not just to turn a trick and get them through the door.
But now a question. Go ahead.
I'm changing the subject because that was a good walk off right there. That was a serious show and tell. Can I bring my show and tell out?
Yes.
Now?
Yes. Let's
what
do it.
Okay. Have?
Couple weeks ago, get a package in the mail, open it up. I have no idea at the time who did this, but I open it up, and this is a cross stitching.
Oh my God.
What on earth?
Wait, you have to describe for people who may be listening to this. So what are you holding?
Yeah, go ahead.
I am holding a gray framed cross stitch of my ESPN publicity picture where I'm holding a microphone and have a giant toothsome smile on my face. And there's a boxing glove coming in and punching me in the face.
What I later found out,
to
the camera, Jeff.
What's the message being sent there? I don't really understand.
I think the message is pretty clear, Clinton. The cross stitching, level of detail would suggest that Jeff, I mean, both should be and may well be very soon get punched in the face.
Oh, well, here's the thing. I found out who it was from, and who it was from was I don't want to completely out her here, but I know her professionally, and she has long said that I have the most punchable face she's ever seen.
There are more punchable faces on the network, but if I did not know
about
if I did not know you, Jeff, I might agree with that. That's far off.
I know.
Is that available for purchase? Does this anonymous female colleague have an Etsy store where I can buy this?
It took months for her to do this. I got a full TikTok from a mutual friend of how long she'd been working on this. Wow. And I'm telling you, it's really good. Like, yeah. It's super impressive.
It legitimately should be sold.
Yeah, I think the ninth
Jeff Passan derp face just got to number one in our power rankings. That's where we just arrived. Well, but all of this does raise this question, right? Because Clinton has his giant Denny's like placemat of minor league teams.
Yes.
Jeff is quoting nerd books. You know, he has a library full of baseball artifacts behind him. Like, you guys are in on this game. And I wonder, like, when it comes to how to realistically see what the game is risking in terms of its fan base, in terms of what is actually the downside in real terms of canceling games, maybe canceling the season, like, what is on the line both culturally and economically? From a cynical perspective, assuming that there are addicts like you maniacs who still obviously are going to watch this thing.
I'll go first.
So let me go through, I want to go through the calculus here in terms of what Major League Baseball and the teams must be thinking in order to do something like this, because it's a ridiculous idea to shut your game down over marginal tens to maybe $100 million, right? Like, there's just a, if you split it up among the 30 teams, let's say that the players hypothetically were to get $100 million in extra value in this. It's $3 million a team. It's $3 million for teams that are worth $1.5 billion, $1.8 billion on average. I mean, it's just an absurd conceit, but it comes from arrogance. It comes from hubris. And it comes more than anything, I think, from being inside of a bubble. That is, it is actually a double bubble. It is the sports bubble and it's the billionaire bubble. And I think both of these together insulate people who own sports teams from reality far too often. They think that their actions come without consequence. They saw the strike back in 94, the World Series lost in 94, continuing on into 95. Then Cal Ripken comes around, then Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa come around, and baseball is saved. And I don't know, I think it must be that arrogance that allows them to look at that not as a panacea that came out of nowhere, but thinking that the same type of thing is going to happen now when we're in a completely different place a quarter century later. We have more entertainment options. We have smartphones. We have every single thing out there in the world for us at our fingertips because everything's connected now. And you're going to tell me that I'm going to come back if I'm not a diehard fan and watch this thing that takes longer than any other entertainment vehicle I use? I mean, seriously, when you're told, Pablo, that a movie is 3 hours, you say to yourself, what? 3 hours for a movie? Well, what if I told you you'd have 162 consecutive 3 hour movies?
Well, and here's the other thing, too, is that the reason why this is so short-sighted is that they're trying to force people to be fans of the game in the same way that people were fans of the game back in the 90s by saying, here's the only thing you're going to care about is walking through these doors. When you're making that much money off of TV contracts and the way that people, the sort of homogenization of fanhood across the internet now, like, you could get through those hurdles as long as you were just playing effing baseball because you'd have content for people to connect to. I know a ton of people that are baseball fans now that do not go to games. They're not going to go to games because they take too long, but they like watching what goes on. They like the players. They enjoy the competition, and you're cutting off even that option by not playing. It's the double bubble. Great, great candy, by the way. I used to read their comics on the side. You know, they have the double
bubble. Double bubble, both a candy and a thing that Sir Mix-a-Lot would be very interested in.
Point. But what I'm saying is that they're cutting off more than they even realize because of that bubble. And it's just like, what are you doing to win some marginal theoretical point about greed? It's just, I don't know. It's despicable is the word that comes to mind, never mind being wholly stupid.
Itty bitty bimbos.
We need to move on. We got things to do.
Yeah, that feels like the microwave clock going on.
I was just on the sideline while we had an actual high-level discussion about sports on this show. So bravo to you three. But now we will move on.
You guys lived Alabaster's dream. He just wanted a high-level sports conversation for however many months we've been doing this fake television show, and he finally got one.
Right.
Incredible.
The face you will never see was just that Jack Nicholson gif of me nodding over and over again. The past 28 minutes.
Just jamming. Speaking of a three-hour movie, jamming your face into the cocaine plate that was Clinton and Jeff.
That was a bowl, buddy. Bowl in the movie, too.
Yes.
All right, we're going to move on. We're going to look at some quotes. We're going to play Whodunit. The game where we show you a quote. You guys have a minute to come together and tell us who done it.
You know I'm always going to ask about who the whodunit silhouette is.
Oh, come on.
You don't know.
It's obviously me.
You can't recognize those biceps?
It's obviously me.
I can't know. Who is that? Is it still Steve Nash? Are we back to Steve Nash?
Dominique Foxworth.
Oh!
It's just ridiculous. Dominique complained that the whodunit avatar was black.
Yes!
And so then it became white, and then it became Dominique, because what Dominique really cared about more than race relations was just his biceps getting silhouetted on fake television.
Right, got it. Okay, moving right along.
All right, first quote. Until you stomp me out, cut my head off, bury me 12 feet under, then I got a chance. I hate losing. I feel like poop, but tomorrow's a new day. And your choices are A, Tom Thibodeau, B, Steph Curry, C, LeBron James, or D, Kyrie Andrew Irving.
So we did learn that Kyrie's middle name is Andrew the other day, which was shocking to all of us. We expected like an Egyptian pharaonic name. We are dealing with, I feel like, a pretty obvious candidate here, right?
Yes,
like,
in this we all mystery, know who said this.
I mean, it has to be Kyrie because he's the only one who would talk about poop, right?
No. I love that. Right? Yeah. No, but the funniest thing here is the level of creativity on the death here. I mean, this is a triple stamp, a double stamp. A, the stomp out. B, cut your head off. C, bury me 12 feet under. Like, all those things got to happen. Pretty sure that if you cut somebody's head off, you don't need to bury them 12 feet under anymore. They're pretty much done. No?
Yeah, but if you have to go 12 feet under, it's the tallest guy. So it's got to be LeBron James.
Yeah. Also, that delusion of tomorrow's a new day. Like, hey, we're still in this, guys, despite me thinking to the contrary. I feel like C, final answer, LeBron James.
Mr. Raymond.
Alabaster.
Yep. There it is.
What do we got?
You gotta, until you stump me out, cut my head off, bury me 12 feet under, then I got a chance. So that's my confidence. You know, obviously, you know, at the end of the day, we got to come in and win ball games and we got to play better. But as long as we got more games to play, we still have a chance. So that's my confidence. You know, I hate losing. I feel like poop right now. But tomorrow's a new day and I'm going to be prepared and ready for the Clippers on Thursday.
Now, before we get to the poop comments, this is moving into like R&B song / Negro spiritual levels of rhythm. He was like, until you stomp me out, cut my head off.
Very
masterful. I was like, whoa. I was like, where's he going with this? Are we going to, is the choir about to break
and
out?
And then, hold on. And then he said poop like a child learning its peas.
That was
said,
so
poop.
Weird.
There was, I mean, Clinton, there was
a pop at the end.
Yeah.
There was a poop pop. There was also like a call and response dynamic.
Yeah.
To the point, because he knows what he's doing. He is calling. Here we are as the media to respond and make a big deal out of this, while maybe in the process sort of alighting the fact that, the Lakers, Alabaster scored like 7 points in like the last, I don't know, 13, 14 minutes of this entire game, this loss to the Mavericks in which they looked like they were dead and then alive. And then, losing 10 now of their last 13 games. And LeBron had 26, 12, and 5. Like, he's not exactly the issue. But, they came back from 21 down, to take the lead and then ultimately lost by 5. And my only disappointment here with LeBron James is that I cannot believe he surrendered to like decapitation. You know, like the idea that like you gotta stop me, cut my head off, bring me. No, man, you're supposed to not. LeBron's confidence, I want to calibrate such that he survives decapitation.
Okay.
I feel like we need to go back and take a look at the quote. But cover up the names at the bottom, please. Cover up the names at the bottom. And tell me if this could not be a twisted love song.
Yeah.
Until you stomp
That's what I'm saying.
Cut my head off. Bury me 12 feet under. Then I got a chance. I hate losing.
What's that on that beat? Boom.
I
and then
feel
it drops.
Like poop, but tomorrow's a new day. Tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah, sign him up.
I feel like poop.
Sign him up. We're playing that on this station. On this station. People, speaking of radio stuff, dude, last week I hosted radio out here for a week. We took three hours of calls for four straight days about LeBron, Raymond, James. Insane.
Oh, God bless him. Thank you for just giving all of us work to do. There's no baseball for you guys, Jeff.
Content king.
You should pivot full on to like being a country music interpreter of LeBron quotes. Honestly, I mean, that feels like a good use of your audience at this point.
Jeff, that's a podcast we could launch. You know what I'm saying? That's something we could do. We could just go to different minor league towns and find country singers to sing songs about the demise of baseball. That's what we could do.
I don't think Jeff's not trying to outsource his voice. He's angling for a deal.
Duos, baby. Duets. What else we got?
I'm just sad that no one took the very low-hanging fruit and said that he would be decapitated, but we can move on. Next whodunit.
Well played.
This looks like it could be multiple things. Okay. Wow.
How are you guys so... We have the production budget of nothing.
Our laser printer budget, Lord, is out of control.
Yes, the DPI on this just... Yeah, well done.
Wonderful. Can we go back next to the quote. Silhouette for a second, though? I want to see, because I thought this, look at this for a second. I thought this could be like a dog looking forward. If it was kneeling, if like the head was like at the top of the right side was like the head of a poodle and the nose was there.
Oh,
and then, okay. Like, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I was
like
gonna
crouched
guess.
A little, pause. You know? Yeah, exactly. See? Okay. I was just making sure I wasn't crazy. Moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a
getting punched in the face.
Yeah,
instead it's that, right?
Also the punch in the face. Yeah.
All right, next quote. Our last quote. I'm one of the best teammates the NBA has ever seen.
No.
Your choices are
Dwight Howard, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, or James Harden.
We gotta let Jeff go first here because his non-NBA analysis here is gonna be my favorite part.
Okay. I feel like Dwight Howard is positively irrelevant in 2022, so I think we can cross him off.
Yeah, I suspect in other years, but this one feels.
He did get banged on. He did get banged on a putback dunk by Luka last night, which was pretty much a microcosm of their whole season.
He did.
Okay. I mean, they all suck. Is there really any? Who's
dare you?
They all stink, but who's got the most hubris? That's the question, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
Who's the most arrogant?
Kyrie, Ben Simmons, James Harden are the three we're choosing from.
I'll take the baton from you here, Jeff, and I'll say that they might in the singular be the most arrogant on any given day, but I think the only person who would long-term compare himself to the rest of the league is Harden. That's for whatever reason, because he's been the most places, I feel like he sees his largeness as more than just, I'm one of the best teammates of my generation. He's one of the best the NBA has ever seen, Pablo.
I mean, I just, okay.
So do you know this?
If it was Ben Simmons, I would have gotten like 50,000 texts about this, so we could cross him off. We heard the buzzer go off. Clint, yes, let's lean towards D. James Harden. Alabaster, what do we got?
I feel like I'm one of the best teammates that the NBA has seen, on the court and off the court.
Oh, off the court. Is that right?
Off the court.
Is that right? Oh, see? Oh, this is a gratuitous shot at somebody's body.
Hey, who said that fat no suits reason. Are mutually exclusive with good teammateship? Wow. That should be processed.
That should be the one. Because that literally looks like it could be Alfred Hitchcock, which is the actual famous silhouette. Like, that is artwork right there. Wow. I'm shocked.
Yeah, no, a Hitchcockian turn, incidentally, that James Harden would just sort of pronounce himself, I'm actually the guy who you don't think I am, as opposed to the guy who you do, the guy who has left multiple teams now behind at will. But look, you'll notice in that clip, Joel Embiid is sitting right next to him and just like loving his life, right? Just bobblehead nodding. And I think the question really is a matter of, like, to get philosophical here, like, what do you value in life? Do you want a teammate who, yes, may abandon you at any given moment, but who, when he's around, is going to make your life on the court that much better? Because that is the story of James Harden. And until that point, he is like, Alabaster, I'm going to say this, and I think it's actually defensible, one of the five greatest offensive players the game has ever seen in terms of just sheer output and production.
I'll let that comment stand.
That is something that does qualify him as being a great guy to be on a team with, unless you are also
unless you
guy,
want to win a championship.
Well,
hell, okay. Pass it off the top rope.
I got one more ring than James Harden, Pablo.
Get out of here, Mr. Process. We don't need that. I mean, I think you're right, though. It is a pick your poison, not pick your poison, it's a pick your preference kind of thing as a friend. Because clearly, he feels emboldened by Embiid allowing this kind of talk to happen. That is obvious. You know what I'm saying? They're like, can we see that clip again?
Love each other.
They're in body contact. When you're with your mans and y'all, I mean, they're sitting close in a way that is a legit brotherly love. You know what I'm saying?
No, Clinton, they're like an inch away from recreating the Lethal Weapon movie poster.
That's
like
fine.
Almost full on back to back, which is, yes, evidence of legitimate affection.
Yeah, and I like that.
Yeah, Alabaster keeps putting down cards, pointing out that James Harden once threw a basketball at a rookie on a team he was on. Blah, blah, blah. That Bruce Brown was talking about how the vibes in Brooklyn are now great because everybody likes everybody
vibe
now.
Check.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the vibe check for James Harden in Philly is astronomical. In Brooklyn, they're pointing out they love it even more that he's gone. I don't know, man. I love James Harden right now, Alabaster.
Take that to the wood. Take that to the wood next time you're sitting on the wood at Barclays and see how that goes. Mm. You're gonna cheer for all you won't wear a Harden jersey sitting on the wood with your rich friends, Pablo. You won't do it.
I mean,
uh-huh.
If I get to,
this is a good bit.
If I honestly, if I just start showing up trolling, yeah, I'm gonna make some calls. I'm gonna make some calls. I might go half Ben Simmons jersey, half Harden, like the mom of an NFL player who is also the brother of an NFL player who I birthed.
Go full Harden coward.
You won't do it. You won't do it.
Do it.
Commit.
Go full Harden coward.
You've made this bed, Papa.
Okay, showing up with like a fat suit, James Harden jersey.
No. Don't try to make a comical thing out of it. You like him so much.
No,
just
I do.
Wear
I
his
do.
Jersey
he
on
is
the
playing,
court.
He is playing so out of his mind right now. Just one of the great point guards in American history, Alabaster,
American
to be
history.
Clear. Yeah, that's right.
Not Argentinian history or French history either.
Well, all due respect.
That was a Spurs
sort
reference.
Of the American Ginobili.
To an extent.
To be noted about this Bruce Brown quote, objectively hilarious because Ben Simmons was traded to the team to take his exact job and role, and he still said this.
Right, I think
noted.
Jeff is looking at his phone, which means he has reporting to do, which means we need to keep it moving.
All right, we're moving on, and
I know how to find
Pablo
the space
Torre,
around
who
me.
Did not bring up strip clubs in that topic. So kudos
wow.
to you.
Wow.
All right, we're going to play a couple Massive rounds oversight. Of What Are the Chances, where we'll give you a topic, you tell us the chances. First one, what are the chances the Giants should trade Saquon Barkley?
Like 1,000,000%. Can we get all the zeros on there? I mean, they don't have use for him right now. They don't.
I'm sorry. Do they have some other running back and some other offensive stalwart that I don't know about? The quarterback maybe? Oh, wait. No, they don't.
No,
they don't
Clint,
have anything.
But
what are
Clint,
you talking about?
It's like you this is a win now kind of a player for a team that isn't going to win now.
Oh,
like it's just it's okay. Saquon Barkley is useful to someone, but no, I mean you're taking a winter coat to the beach. Like you're not going there. Like, that's not of use to you where you're going. Where you're going, you know, yeah, like you don't need roads. Like there is a massive problem of expectation with the Giants right now. So 1,000,000%. They should get rid of them.
Okay, I was understanding that from the other side because I'm like, if you expect to try to be any good, getting rid of one of the players that people actually show up to see, probably not your best idea. And I don't exactly trust the Giants scouting department to trade him for a bunch of picks and get something better. You see what I'm saying? That was the only standpoint I was going.
What's the number?
Zero. Because I think you should keep trying with him. He's on his, he's on his rookie deal still, which is amazing to me.
Trent Richardson went for a first round pick once upon a time. Is Saquon Barkley even going to bring back a first round pick at this point? Probably not,
so.
Right?
I wouldn't think
like,
so.
Like,
yeah, no.
That's why,
I'm at 10%. And by the way, how are the Giants, who are absolutely terrible over the salary cap? Can someone explain the NFL to me?
We're building! Like, the greatest quote ever.
Like, wait, explain how it is that you can mismanage a balance sheet to the point where nothing that you're doing actually makes sense in literal or figurative senses. Yeah, right. $11 million over the cap. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Alabaster, what is your read on this? Because Dave Gettleman and his computer guys ostensibly are gone. In comes this guy whose name I'm just struggling to pronounce and remember. Joe, we discussed this.
Joe Shane
is in. Like, I feel like pessimism is the appropriate response when your GM says, quote, if anyone is going to call and they're interested in any of our players, I'm certainly going to listen, end quote. Gee, thanks, Joe.
I've heard that quote from general managers so many times. You know what that means? That means I'm not trading him. I'll listen. If you give me a first round pick for him, I might consider it, but you're not going to, because it's 2022 and it's the NFL and we don't trade first round picks for old running backs. And he's not old. I understand that. And he's good. I understand that too. Saquon Barkley's not getting a first round pick. He's not going anywhere.
God, they haven't won six. They haven't won more than six.
They are an irrelevant franchise. Let us move on. Every franchise in the NFC East is irrelevant, not named the Cowboys, and they're borderline there too.
Well,
am I wrong?
Relevance in a sort of like criminal investigation sense, quite relevant.
Football context, sir. Obviously,
football.
What I'm referring to.
Yeah, more like what you said. Yeah.
All right, moving on. This week.
We got our last one of the chances. And the question is, we have a clip for you guys to watch here. What are the chances Christopher is actually worse at this puzzle than Lori?
I'll solve.
Okay.
Another feather in your hat.
No. First of all, quickly, Pablo, I don't believe this is real.
$650.
G.
No G. Thomas.
Oh, no!
What is happening? Why are you doing this?
This is not real to me.
The bankrupt got you. Lori, I have another shot at it. You can spin the wheel or try to solve the puzzle.
Poor guy.
I'll solve?
Okay.
Another feather in your lap.
No!
Although the feather is moving around. Christopher.
Drawn to the screen.
Dean. How long is this clip?
No.
It's like
Thomas.
2 whole minutes.
What?
Yes. We're not even close to it yet.
You should be able to guess the answer.
Laura, you have another opportunity here. You can spin the wheel.
This dude,
you can try to solve the puzzle. What do you want to do?
Mustache just eating
go ahead and spin
it.
If you don't know.
I'm
going to
go ahead and spin.
Don't get buzzed out here on time.
Go ahead and spin if
definitely
you don't
spin, Laura. Definitely should spin. History is taught.
Well, what letter would you like?
A P?
Yes, there's a P.
Yes.
Spin or solve.
I will solve.
Okay.
Can you say map?
Another feather in your map.
Christopher, it's your turn.
I'm just not buying this.
Oh my goodness. The bankrupt got you. Thomas, you have no money. I don't know what you're going to spin. You can
I'll
try to
I'll spin.
Okay.
Thomas is still in this game somehow.
So what letter would you like?
A C.
Is there a C up there anywhere? There you go. You want to solve this?
Yeah, I'll solve. Another feather in your cap.
Yeah, there you go.
Freaking Thomas, man.
I'm not buying that. That had to be a prank on Sajak. There's just no way. I cannot believe the three adult humans actually did that without coordinating a bit. I refuse.
I know the O was on the board, but I really wanted that last solve to be another feather on your cap. That would have just like brought it all together.
Well, the funny thing is that the first guy, Chris, guessed wrong to start the clip. The first minute of the clip is him guessing wrong like three times. And there's already 90% of the board done. It's unbelievable.
Anyway. So, oh my God. By the way, a feather in your lap is a great name for a strip club that James Harden frequents, incidentally. So what are the chances Christopher is actually worse at this puzzle than Lori? I mean, Lori, who had the
zero.
Most at bat? Lori did, right?
Yeah, zero. Like, it's zero.
Null,
yeah.
This is a null zero. Set. This is a null she, set to me.
She dropped the map. She dropped the map. Like on a third try.
There it is.
Map.
I feel like... taking 48 minutes for me to mention strip clubs is a win. It's progress. It's
map.
Maturation. Yeah, the map the map thing
PR.
Feels
personal record.
Feels like she should not be able to live that down.
I wish I knew
that,
what
that
the
setup
it
should be,
setup,
be in your obituary, honestly. I guessed a feather in your map should be like legally the second sentence of an obituary.
Null set. There we go. I'm the king of the null set, Jeff. If I'm not buying the premise, I'm going null set. That's how I work.
I was about to go negative percentage. I know that doesn't exist.
That's not right.
But I was about to go negative percentage.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you know what? Why not? Give me minus 1,000%.
Is that a thing?
Absolutely.
At the strip club it is. Hello!
Oh, yeah. There's a very generous loan policy at A Feather in Your Lap. Yeah, you can just withdraw and then pay back later. You'll have a negative on your record, but James Harden's always good for it. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason they raise his jersey to the rafters, as it were. I think that actually happened to James Harden. Great teammate. By the way, reason why he's a great teammate.
I think I'm actually going to make these placemats. I have two, and I wasn't ever really sure what to do with them. And now that you mentioned that, Denny's, I might actually get these laminated and make placemats out of them.
Just a morbid graveyard of minor league baseball teams as you eat your... What do you eat for breakfast, Clinton? What are you having? I feel like in as ESPN things. LA's Clinton Yates.
Here. Eggs. Hold on. You want to go see my eggs? Hold on.
Did he microwave them?
Eggs. I hope he's going to his fridge.
These are the eggs that JC buys.
A different sort of eggs.
JC buys these eggs from the store. Happy eggs. See?
Wow.
What makes them happy?
Why are you?
Are they large yolked eggs?
No, but look, check it out. They're not even all the same on the inside. Oh, little mystery.
What?
You never know.
You buy whimsical eggs?
I don't buy whimsical eggs. I eat whimsical eggs because the woman I love buys whimsical eggs.
I think she paints them just to make them happy.
That would be funny.
All right, guys, you ready for some bonus topics?
Sure.
We'll close out the show with this. And this is actually the first time we put up a poll who has the most punchable face on today's show. The early results were 100% Pablo Torre. And that is an actual real tweet. But where it stands right now is Pablo Torre is still lapping the field at 53% of voters say that he has the most punchable face on today's panel.
You know what, guys? You wish.
It's the hair.
You wish.
It's the hair.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the hair. I think it's the facial hair.
Oh, there's that too. Yo, that's particularly funny because I have many pictures of myself doing the same thing, but none of them look like that.
Yeah, that is a very good point, Clinton. I was filling in for Clinton that day, by the way. That's the backstory of this sad meme.
I'm sorry, that is personally hilarious to both of us. I love that.
It really is. But if you do want to cross stitch that, I will also frame it and hang it up in my house. So great.
Yeah,
she won't.
As a member,
Alvester, are you done? Are you done attempting to bully me, or is there more content that you wanted to exhaust?
Nope, that's it. That's the show.
Okay.
Very good.
Very well.
Wow.
I want to thank you. Really, I'm legitimately going to make that's like a really good idea. I'm going to make placemats out of these things and use them to eat breakfast every single day of the week.
You're welcome. I charge a very small royalty fee.
Oh yeah, minus 1,000%. Is that how much?
Jack, if you wouldn't mind just singing us out of your first episode of Debatable.
There's a guy who hits his name Randy Rosa Reina.
Well, not
every time
that
he takes a swing, it is a thing. It's Cosa Buena. Running around the bases, he's as fast as a hyena. Oh, Rosa
Reina. Goodbye.
I'm going to leave.
We have other shows to do, so we have to leave. See you, Jeff. Great work this week.